NPR.
This is The Indicator from Planet Money. I'm Darian Woods. Queen Elizabeth II was the longest-serving monarch in British history. She had 70 years on the throne. And for the head of the country and the royal family, that is a remarkable indicator of continuity, which has now been broken. In an episode late last year, we looked into the finances of the royal family, which is arguably Britain's most famous brand. And we asked if it could survive without its CEO, the Queen. And this was an uncertain period then for the monarchy. It was beset by multiple scandals. And it's an even more consequential moment now with King Charles III at its head. So today, we are replaying that episode for you. Stacey Vanek-Smith and NPR's London correspondent Frank Langford will tell us about The Firm, which is all coming up after the break.
In Britain, people refer to the royals as The Firm. And that is because the monarchy is a family enterprise with a support staff, which includes everything from press secretaries to engineers, and of course, the senior royals, including the Queen and her son, Prince Charles, all pitch in.
And they do. And they do a lot of ribbon cuttings, a lot of charitable events. Occasionally, they throw amazing weddings like Meghan's and Harry's in 2018. And they also try to serve, and this has been really, really tricky, as the first family of the UK.
And keeping the firm running costs hundreds of millions of dollars a year. Expenses range from, you know, new boilers for Windsor Castle to travel on the royal train. Security alone is estimated to cost well over $130 million a year. And a lot of that money comes from taxpayers. And some of it, though, comes from these huge property portfolios called the duchies.
Yeah. So in order to make sense of all of this, I met up with this guy named David McClure. He wrote a book called The Queen's True Worth.
An awful lot of rubbish is written about the royal family. There are a lot of things that are just made up half-truths. The thing about finances is that they're objective.
So the Queen draws funds from a couple of big sources. One of them is called the Sovereign Grant, which is based on the earnings of a collection of properties known as the Crown Estate.
It includes Regent Street in the heart of London, but it also includes horse racing grounds and a lot of the offshore Britain where, at the moment, they're building wind farms on it. So it's a very lucrative part of real estate.
Now, the British taxpayers, they provide the Queen with the equivalent of 25% of the Crown Estate's annual profit. That comes out to about $115 million a year. Royals help bring in a lot of money in palace ticket sales and foreign tourism, but they're also something of what we would call a cost center in that many of the firm's functions don't directly generate revenue. And David McClure, he says the money they receive that's tied to the sovereign grant should be based on need, not a percentage.
In theory, it could always go up and up.
Which means they could just spend more and more.
There's no real incentive.
The royal family's other big money machines are the two duchies, those property portfolios that we talked about. The first is the Duchy of Lancaster. It includes more than 70 square miles of farmland, a private airfield, 10 castles, and 2 acres of prime London real estate, including the land beneath the Savoy Hotel. Altogether, the duchy generates about $30 million a year for the Queen. And the monarchy seized most of this land way back in the 13th century from a rebel baron who tried to topple the king.
Originally, it was going to be a safety net in case the monarch got deposed. In many ways, the queen shouldn't own the Duchy of Lancaster. It really should be owned by the state. But because it's gone on for so long and it's embarrassing, no one has done anything about it. You know, it's a cash cow. It's a wonderful cash cow.
And Stacey, as of this year, the net assets of the duchy, more than $760 million.
That is a lot of money for a family to have.
And that's not all. The second property portfolio is the Duchy of Cornwall, which includes 130,000 acres of land, net assets of nearly $1.3 billion, and it provides about $27 million annually to Prince Charles. And in this quirk of history, of which there are many when we look at the royal finances, both duchies receive more than $2 million annually from estates of people in the area who died without a will, and that money then goes to charity.
So, okay, that is the funding. So let's talk about the function. The Queen, of course, is the head of state. A lot of people in Britain, of course, very happy to have the Queen represent the country to the wider world with her very distinctive royal brand.
Heads of government come and go, but the monarchy has been surviving for 1,000 years. So it gives an important sense of continuity and stability and a sense of duty, working hard, diligence. of decorum and acting correctly.
Do you think she's been a good steward of the brand?
I think she's been an excellent steward of the brand. I think history regards her as one of the most successful monarchs of all time.
Her kids, though, Stacey, they're another story. The divorce from Diana still shadows Prince Charles 25 years later. His brother, Prince Andrew, was forced out of royal duties in 2019. A woman says she was forced to have sex with the prince back when she was 17, which he denies. All of this is connected to Andrew's friendship with the late sex offender, Jeffrey Epstein.
There have been an awful lot of scandals that have really diluted the brand. So if the rationale of the royal family is to be a model of good behavior, it hasn't done very well.
Still, the polls show that most British people support the monarchy. Celebrity is part of the attraction.
But it's celebrity with great history and great glamour and great palaces. So you can understand how, just in terms of celebrity, it might win over the Kardashians. But that's not the whole story. I think it's also got something to do with the mystique. Everyone projects onto the Queen what they want to see onto her.
But Stacey, the Queen, of course, is not going to live forever. And people wonder if Prince Charles can keep the firm going after she's gone.
And unlike Elizabeth, who became Queen in her 20s, Charles is already 73.
People have often speculated whether he should step down and just miss a generation.
What do you think?
No, I think he's waited so long. I think he has a right to be king.
What would be best for the monarchy, though? Skip a generation?
Probably. But it's not going to happen. He's waited 50 years for this top job. He's not going to suddenly say, I don't want it anymore.
And Stacey, there's one more worrisome indicator. The Queen polls considerably higher than the monarchy itself.
People who aren't necessarily monarchists say, I'm a queenist. People have been not supporting the monarchy, they've been supporting the Queen. And so when she dies, there'll be enormous void.
What are you? A monarchist, a queenist, neither?
I don't have a corgi in the fight.
A corgi in the fight! The Queen has all the corgis, right? The Queen loves corgis.
Her favorite animals, along with horses.
So, Frank, this brings up the question, can the monarchy survive after the Queen is gone?
I think in the short run, the answer is yes. But so much hinges on Charles and how he handles the job of king. I mean, let's face it. If the firm really were a normal business, it wouldn't choose someone like Charles to save the brand.
One final note, David McClure, our royal commentator and writer who we heard from in today's episode, passed away in June. This episode of The Indicator was originally produced by Julia Ritchie and Jessica Beck, with help from Kevin Beasley and Isaac Rodriguez. It was fact-checked by Taylor Washington. Our senior producer is Viet Le, our editor is Kay Concannon, and The Indicator is a production of NPR.